For he's always glad when everything's bad, cause then his collections are good, 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 good. His nose knows no pathway of roses, no flowers that bloom in the spring. For it's catch as catch can for the scavenger man. Posterity, where is thy? All right, we're done.
That was so good, man.
Hey there, this is Seth Wires from Channel 9 here in Las Vegas.
Yes, we are. Yeah. I'm Ward Bell. I just thought I'd get that in.
Nice. And what show are you in, sir?
Yes, I am playing in the Blue Room all week singing your favorites from the 1920s and 30s.
Nice. That's awesome. Live from the 1920s, we have Ward Bell at Debonair Section in Las Vegas. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. I'm feeling like I should give him some of my Hector the Garbage Collector.
I think you should.
All right. I'm Hector the Garbage Collector, a man who is misunderstood. For he's always glad when everything's bad, cause then his collections are good, 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 good. His nose knows no pathway of roses, no flowers that bloom in the spring. For it's catch as catch can for the scavenger man. Posterity, where is thy? All right, we're done.
That was so good, man. You have to watch Ward Bell in Vegas. I mean, if you don't have a Ward Bell at a Dev intersection, it doesn't feel right.
There you go.
So what kind of stuff do you do, my friend?
What do I do? I feel like I'm all over the place.
Yeah.
But I have a wonderful little company that I'm a principal in.
Okay.
In California, near San Francisco, called Idea Blade.
Cool.
And we make, we made DevForce, which is a...
Oh, of course. I've heard of DevForce.
And then more people have heard of Breeze, which is a data management library for people building spas. And we also help our clients figure out how to build their applications in this web technologies.
Yeah, it's very, and we've already had Elijah Manner, John Papa, among others, help us understand, Dan Wallin, understand JavaScript things in it. To me, it feels like the Wild West right now.
You know what? I hear that. And you know, when you've been steeped in it for a while, may I take my hat?
Absolutely.
May I give it to you?
Yeah, I will take it.
I thought you'd look good in it.
We'll put it right here.
All right. There are Wild West aspects of it, for sure. Because every time a framework looks like it's going to take hold, somebody kind of comes along and says, no, you don't.
Right.
I got you. Yeah. And then they say, oh, yeah, I'm coming back. And so there's a lot of to and fro there. And that is really stimulating.
Uh-huh.
It's a little bit like, in cell phones. We expect that kind of turnover in cell phones, but we don't seem to expect that in our frameworks. Why is that?
That's a really good way to look at it, I think.
Yeah.
Even with the turnover, and even though it's Wild West, it still feels like there are certain patterns / frameworks that have survived the test of time. And when I say the test of time, I mean like years.
They go way back.
Like 2 years.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's a long time.
It is. By the way, I don't know if you have it on your resume, but you've got like 6 years of Angular 2 experience, right?
Of course.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I've been doing Angular since 85, man. You know me.
Exactly.
And so what are some of those frameworks / patterns that have survived sort of this mad dash for gold to the West?
By name, you mean?
Yeah, by name or by pattern or whatever.
Okay.
What should we, like if you're starting with JavaScript, what should you go look at first? Because this, everybody knows this is what's important.
Well, I think that you can say that jQuery's time has passed.
Yes.
All right. So, because what we're doing is we've gotten beyond scripting the page and trying to enrich the page a little bit while we continue to compose everything on the server.
And that's an important statement. jQuery's time is in the past.
It feels that way to me.
Yeah, I mean, it does to me too.
At least I wouldn't use it because that's not the way in which I'm constructing pages. For one thing, that was a very important part of the history of the way in which we consumed applications.
Sure.
Which is still part of the MVC server frameworks these days, mm-hmm. where the server's responsible for creating the pages, and then it pushes it at the user, and I sit here in my browser, and I say, thank you, server, I'm so happy you gave me that page.
This is beautiful, yeah.
Thank you so much. Am I allowed to touch you? And you say, yes, you can push the button, but you can't think mm-hmm. on the browser. You have to send that all the way back, let it recompose, and come back. I'm making fun because I like to, but that idea of that's the way in which users should interact with their applications just doesn't meet the reality of the way in which people want their experience to be. And look, on a phone, you expect it to interact with you and respond right away, right? And in a desktop application of old, you would expect that. So why would we expect that we should be able to, you know, we should have to wait for a server to decide what we're going to see next? You've got tremendous computing power here. Let's make those application decisions here. Yes, keep the server business logic, the security logic and all that stuff back safe on the server, but come on, let's have the interaction here. Let's not go back every time I want to change a screen. And so the whole spa concept, which is still just taking hold, is look, you really can. You can live a lot right here, and you can do all that screen switching right here, and you can make those views happen right here, and you can go back for data, but you don't have to go back for HTML. Stay here for the HTML and all that stuff. Go back there to get the data that you need or the services that you need.
And this spa type way of doing these kind of applications is pretty old. I mean, we're talking at least 2 years, right?
At least 2 years.
I mean, it's in JavaScript years, that's like 10 to 15 years, right?
Yeah. No, it's true. I think it's taking hold. But it does put a new burden on the developer.
Sure.
All right? Because before, you could just litter the page with whatever and litter the global namespace. And who cares? Because you went back to the server, got first page, the decks are clear, everything's good. Here, I'm going to live with it for a long time. And, you know, so now I got to treat it like I'm building a real application on this side. And when you do that, you have to start saying, wow, I've got to employ some patterns here.
Yeah.
I can't just wing it.
And not only that, but JavaScript is such a lenient language that, I mean, you can program yourself into a hole that you cannot dig out of.
You certainly can make a mess.
That's right.
Now, I think you can make a mess in anything, but in JavaScript, you can make a really good mess.
Yeah, that's right. Some languages are more prone to better messes.
Yeah.
So what are some things that we can do as... Because now, it's sad, but it's not sad. Maybe it's exciting that every dev is now also should be a front end dev as well.
If they want to play here,
yeah.
I think if you want to deliver a great response on the web, I think you're going to have to face into this, and I hope you relish facing into this.
Yeah,
but I think that there are. As a consequence of us having to take it more serious things have happened. Mm-hmm. And like you were talking about patterns earlier, so now a lot of the patterns we continue to use when we're programming server-side or when we were doing desktop apps and say WPF, WinForms, any of those other technologies, mm-hmm. a lot of those disciplines are here. So you have model view controller mm-hmm. on the client. You have dependency injection on the client. I remember when people said, you'll never need dependency injection in a JavaScript. I remember that like it was yesterday.
It probably was.
They thought, what? That's overkill. Not in the least. Right. You will, for the same reasons you want DI on the server, you want it here too, in terms of being able to have those decoupled parts and being able to adjust what specific implementation of interface you're getting mm-hmm. and for testability. All the same sort of disciplines that we apply in developing applications on the server, they belong here. And so they've been coming down to us. And now we have TypeScript.
Yeah.
And I remember when people thought that was an iffy proposition. I am one of those people, right? I said, oh yeah, that TypeScript stuff, that's good for you people from C#.
Sure.
You know, you can't handle your JavaScript. Okay, you know, you do that. You know what? I'm writing in TypeScript.
And so let me be clear. I was in the camp of, I'm a C# guy, and I'm going to need to be some TypeScript to get something to make sense. You obviously already knew JavaScript. We're writing Breeze.js. We're writing some very serious frameworks with some good patterns. What moved you over to thinking, yeah, you know, maybe I should look at TypeScript?
Well, partly my clients, you know, wanted to have more of that kind of support that you get from a strongly typed language. Then the tooling started. First of all, TypeScript itself evolved, became much stronger, mm-hmm. And then the tooling around it evolved. And VS Code came out, and it was startling in terms of the kind of support that it could provide. And Visual Studio's TypeScript support evolved, and that's amazing about what it can do. And I started saying, you know what? I'm tired of typing the wrong characters and getting the casing wrong and not knowing what it is. I'm tired of that. Because that's my big mistake. You know, those are mistakes I make most of the time.
Yeah.
And just, you know, it's not so bad. And then it wasn't getting in my way anymore.
I see.
Originally, I felt like TypeScript was getting in my way. But now it feels very seamless, and it's helping me. I've gotten over the whole business of transpiling from TypeScript into JavaScript. It's that whole process, the friction involved in that has begun to subside. And it just it's just helping a lot. And I said, why wouldn't I want that? And then, of course, I'm now engaged in frameworks that are looking forward to ECMAScript 2015, I guess they call it. You know, like Angular 2 and Aurelia. And I don't know the state of React in this regard, how much sort of ES 2015 they're interested in. But now these languages, it's really compelling because the support that you get in TypeScript to write for those platforms is huge.
Absolutely. So what is your framework of choice for the moment, if I may say that? Because obviously you might change your mind tomorrow or yesterday. Well, not yesterday, but you know what I mean.
You mean for if I'm trying to deliver a specific page application today?
Yeah.
You know, I don't like picking winners.
Well, let's do this.
I know what I'm most familiar with.
Let's do this. Let's just say here's maybe the top three you should consider. Here's where I like this. Here's where I like this. Here's where I like this. That way you're not really picking a winner.
Well, I for today, we're talking about release software. The top dog is Angular. It's really easy for me at this point in Angular 1 to write in Angular 1. I understand that the learning curve is hard, they say. People say that. I didn't experience it that way when I was learning it, but you know, I don't know why. But I found it, it felt very simpatico. And I think one of the reasons it felt simpatico was because I was a Silverlight programmer before.
Interesting. So was there a lot of parallel between Silverlight and
felt
Angular?
Like that. Maybe that's a curse word or something like that.
It's okay. I mean,
but MVVM, you know, it fit that like a glove, and I was already really familiar with dependency injection. In other words, I wasn't a traditional web developer who had created pages and pushed them, and I was a person who had these kinds of disciplines and constructs in mind building Silverlight apps. And so when I saw this thing, it was, that works.
That's interesting that you draw that similarity, because it makes sense. I mean, Silverlight is this thing that's running in your browser. It does its thing whenever it has to, and sometimes it had to call back.
Yep, it's the same model. Same model, same architecture. You draw the same architecture diagram.
That's awesome.
Now, before that, there was Knockout, which just controlled
the
binding side, but you mix that in with what Rob had produced with Durandal, and you had a nice application framework, and that was the winner before Angular came along and displaced it. And now Angular 1 comes along, and then other people start attacking, and I guess the biggest contender is React plus something. Again, React is more like Knockout in that it really focuses on that one little
problem.
The view
problem, area.
The view model. Yeah, how do I compose that view and get it on there? But then there are a bunch of libraries that have grown up around it with insane names like Reflux. Reflux. And I always say, you know, and it has acid guarantees, therefore acid reflux.
That's awesome.
Yeah, well, but anyway, that's serious. And people are building good stuff in that. Yeah. And any client that wants me to build that stuff, we're good for you.
That's right.
But Angular's the stuff we know. But now it's under threat, and they're ready. All of these have successors.
So Angular in JavaScript years is fairly older.
It is. It's got to be at least 4 or 5 years.
When did Angular first come out?
I don't remember, but I believe it was 4 or 5 years ago.
That is actually a long time. I thought it was less than that.
No, it got popular. Some of these things are out there for a while, and then take a while to grab hold.
I see.
So it took a few years for it to spread, and then it went viral, and now there are some, you know, there's well over a million Angular developers out there.
So let's talk about now the change to Angular 2. And now that you say it's 5 years old, it makes sense that they're doing a break, because the language has changed dramatically just this year.
That's right. They used to support IE8 and I don't know if they even went back to IE6. In other words, they had all these concerns, and they were stuck in a JavaScript that constrained what a framework could do. And they also, in time, any language accumulates cruft.
Yeah, it's true.
And they realize they made mistakes that they wish they could walk away from, but you can't.
Yeah.
And then other people would say, oh, I see all these mistakes you made. I can write a new framework that eliminates your mistakes and does it, right. You know, and look at how fast I am. Yeah. And they're sitting there, grumble. But it's also an opportunity, right? This whole ECMAScript 2015 move, the fact that the engines are, you know, everybody's adapting to this world, and they're cutting away. They're saying, look, let's give up on the IE's and before. Mm-hmm. Let's face it, the modern browser and then the browsers to be, let's do it.
Awesome. So I thought maybe because we've had Dan Wallin and John Papa and Elijah talk more about Flux, but they talked about Angular too, and they just sort of explained where things were. I thought maybe you could show us, like, how does this app actually run? What's the process? Like, where does it start? And when something happens and there's a change, how does that change sort of propagate? I thought maybe you could show us how to do that.
I can. Should we can start from a getting started app here right now. Plunker.
Let's do it.
All right. Have you ever seen Plunker before?
I haven't. What's Plunker?
Okay. Plunker is one of those on the browser coding places where you can where you can put your different library, you know, your different files and stuff like that. So I've just got the simplest possible, like, stand up Angular 2 app going here.
This is cool because I mean you could totally, like, this is so easy to show. Yeah,
it's easy to show, and it's easy to play with and easy to mess with.
Right.
All right, and it's obviously I'm not going to ship it because it's a little hard getting my customers to go to Plunker. But here we are. So
can we maximize the screen so we can get it?
We certainly can. You want to F11 that baby?
Yeah, let's do that. Oh, beautiful.
Wham. All right. So ignore the stuff on the left. So this is an index.html, right? And like all index.html's, it loads some libraries. The first one here is System.js. Mm-hmm. In the new world, we no longer sort of drop everything into the big global window and say, there you go. Mm-hmm. And we don't even use namespaces anymore. Instead, what we're doing is we're thinking of a world of loading modules. Mm-hmm. All right. So the browsers aren't ready to do that yet. There's a new standard for it. They aren't ready to do it, so you shim it. Mm-hmm. And there are a number of contenders for how you do this, how you manage that. System.js is one of them. It's very easy to use, and it happens to be the one that a lot of people demonstrate.
And what does it do? Is it taking TypeScript files and making
it? It has nothing to do with TypeScript. Okay. It's a file loader.
Oh.
On demand, and it also does dependency of it can do a little bit of the dependency following. So, because you're going to see in JavaScript 2015 and in TypeScript and so forth, you say, I import this thing, mm-hmm. right? And now I've got that thing. Well, you know what? It needs something else.
Oh.
And something else needs something else. Yeah. And so what you want is some system to load those
and that's
to figure out what the dependency chain is and load them on demand.
Okay.
And so it can load them on demand. It can bundle. It can do all these things. But we're going to use it to load on demand.
Okay. So that when you use the import statement, system is actually knowing how to get that stuff out.
Under the hood, what that import statement transpiles to is calls to system.
Got it. Okay.
All right. So actually, at some point, I could show you what transpiled code looks like. Mm-hmm. And it's not bad, Seth. I want to tell you this. We were just talking about this in my session today. People were saying, oh, you know, and the cool thing about transpiled codes is there's a map, and so I can debug it in the original TypeScript. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, yes, you can. But you know what I do? I turn that off. I debug in JavaScript, the JavaScript that's actually produced by the transpiler. And they looked at me like I was from outer space. And the reason is that the darn stuff looks I can mentally translate very easily between the JavaScript that's generated and the TypeScript that I wrote.
I see.
And I have trust issues.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so I want to see what it actually
that's awesome.
Actually produced.
And that's cool because, I mean, it might even give you a sense for good, like I've written some TypeScript and seen what it produced, and uh-huh. I'm like, oh, that's how you do that.
Uh-huh.
Like prototypical inheritance.
Yeah.
It does such a good job at doing that the right way that I actually learned, that's what that is.
I learned JavaScript from it.
Nice.
You go to the playground, TypeScript playground, is the place to see how it's, that's where I go to try things out in TypeScript, new constructs that mm-hmm. I said, let's see what that does. Yeah, I love it.
There's some cleverness going on.
There is some real smarts going on.
Cool.
So anyway, I need a module loader.
Okay.
And then I need TypeScript itself. Why? Because in the real world, I'm going to do the compilation, the transpilation ahead of time. But for fooling around like we are,
we need
a transpile in the browser.
Okay.
So we're just going to do it in the browser. And then I need Angular itself. All right, so mm-hmm. I'm just loading the Angular library. Now, I have to tell System.js what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. All right, so I'm saying, hey, you know what? Would you transpile this stuff for me automatically? So when I ask for something, it'll transpile it on the fly. All right. And then one of the things that we learn in Angular 2 is that you write, it's kind of nice. There's a kind of a clean separation between the code I write that just is sort of like, what's the business? What mm-hmm. are you doing? Mm-hmm. And then, and that's just like a class or something. And then there's metadata that hangs around on the outside of it that describes that class to Angular, so Angular can see that class and know what to do.
Sort of like an attribute in C#.
Exactly. A decorator is just like, as soon as somebody who's written C# hears attribute and I say it's like that, they're cool. And Java too.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So you need to tell them to do that, because what happens, most type information out of TypeScript disappears. That's one of the cool things about TypeScript is I've got all that typing jazz and mm-hmm. all that, and then when I transpile, like, it's out of there. It's not in the runtime.
Right.
And that's normally a good thing.
Yeah.
Nice, efficient, tight JavaScript.
Yeah.
Except if that all that type information would be really useful to a framework to understand what you're doing. So this little magic phrase in there causes it for certain places to generate metadata, the type information into the JavaScript itself. Mm-hmm. And so that the frameworks can come along and read it.
Cool.
Right? And that's how it knows the difference between a class and a component.
So typically when you're writing your, this, since we're just playing, we want to see how it works, we're having the transpilation happening, we're having the import stuff happening, all in the browser. But typically you would use like a grunt or a gulp or even npm scripts to transpile that out.
Yeah, and I'll show you, when I show you the Tour of Heroes, which John Papa wrote for the Google mm-hmm. people, we'll show you how that works.
Cool.
If you want.
Yeah, absolutely. He showed a little bit of that, but I'd like to see your take on it.
Okay. So anyway, here we are all doing that. And then so, you know, that's all the throat clearing that you would kind of expect.
Yeah.
Exactly. And now you get to this, and it's like, say, what? First of all, last I looked, my app was not in the HTML standard.
No, it's not.
No. So this world is all about essentially creating HTML the way you want it. Okay. Adding tags that actually have meaning, your meaning, as you want. You're constructing these things and you're allowing a framework to come along and read this and turn it into basic HTML.
So I'm going to talk about two new things. One new thing. Is this similar to the new ASP.NET 5 tag helper?
Why, yes it is. They say the similar concept has found its way into ASP.NET 5, to MVC 6.
That's awesome.
And tag helpers.
So
and
the
so
tag
helpers gives you that sort of same vision of, man, I really like to write my client, my server-side HTML as if the HTML were semantic, the way I want it.
I see. So that would be for server-side rendering. Yeah. This for client-side rendering.
Correct.
Got it.
And that's the distinction, because people want to know.
Yeah.
What should they do, one or the other? And I say, look, it's depending on what kind of app are you delivering.
Sure.
Is it a client-side app? Then you don't need the tag helpers in the MVC stuff. If you're staying in the MVC paradigm, in which you prepare the application pages on the server, man, tag helpers are really cool, because now I'm composing that HTML in a way in which I can read it and understand it and it has semantic value.
Awesome. The best tag helper I've seen is the one where it has the logged in link.
Yeah.
Because that's a server concern.
Yeah.
Are you authorized to do something, or are you authenticated? And so that feels like a good server-side tag helper, but on the client side, it feels a little different. Like, should I highlight, should I do use this or should I use that? If it's a client, I can turn you use it and use the Angular tag.
If you're living on the client.
Sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're making up our own tags here. And we really picked this lovely name, My App. Oh, boy. Yeah. So what's behind all of that? Well, let's just sort of hold that in our memory and let's switch over to AppTS, which is like the silliest component you can write. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I like to draw people's attention to is, we ain't doing anything,
yeah.
So let's not do anything.
That's right.
That's an empty class, friends. It's not doing anything. And that's just a class. What makes it a component is this, what you would think of as a C# attribute, which is technically a decorator. Mm-hmm. And in the decorator, what are we saying? What we're saying is, hey, you know what, Angular? When it comes time, if you ever see any element that's named My App, and where did we see that before?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. If you ever see that, use this component. Take that thing and put this component where that My App is.
Got it.
All right? And what are you going to put in there? What you're going to put in there is, well, I can do an inline template. So it's going to stick this puppy in there, mm-hmm. which we can see is actually already happening.
Sure.
All right. So, and I could, hey, Seth, and I would I would like to think that that's what's going to happen.
Sure.
Wouldn't you? All right. But now, you know, we're not actually using much Angular here. Yeah. You know, we're not doing any real binding right here, but we're trying to just stand up.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Stand up and take notice. So that's basically it. We're doing some import here out of the big kitchen sink Angular library. Why? Well, because that's a function. You know, these are symbols. There's like using statements mm-hmm. in C sharp.
Sure.
If you're used to using, mm-hmm. this is it. So I'm using that one there, and I'm using Bootstrap to say, hey, when the app starts, I want you to stand up the app component. That's the root component of all my my entire application. And then I guess you should go find the place it should be and stick it in there. All right? So that's what's happening. All right there.
That's not hard at all. I mean,
It feels pretty straightforward to me.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do something a little more complicated.
Let's do something a little more complicated.
Okay. So this is the running app.
Uh-huh.
And so the point of this app was to convince the first one, the getting started, is sort of like, what does it take to get this off the ground?
Uh-huh.
This one is like, okay, I'm sitting here and I'm skeptical. I want to know, I have a vision of an application in my mind. I know the things that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And can I do those things in Angular 2? Because if I can't, I'm out of here.
Right.
All right. So what are the kinds of things that I need to do in an app? Well, I need to navigate. All right. So I've got two simple links here and I'm going between pages. I can do that. I can deal. I need to be able to get some data and present it in a list.
Mm-hmm.
I think I can do that. You know what? I hear a lot about master detail, don't you?
Yeah.
It's kind of like the standard paradigm business applications. I should be able to click that thing, and something should show up down below.
Sure.
Like, that's the order I'm working on, right? And Rubberman or whatever. But when I go into here, I should be able to drill in, right? This is so far, this is a read-only, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just finding my way around. I should be able to drill in, right? So if I click a button here, I should be able to go to a detail screen. Now, it'd be nice to have animations. There's lots of other cool stuff, but I'm just trying to get, like, can I do what I have to do to deliver an app? All right, and so I do, and I have a little place down here where I can start editing the Rubberman, and the Rubberman can, and as I'm doing it, we're having the equivalent of two-way data binding here uh-huh. because I'm making the change here, and it's propagating in the display up above, and then I can go back, and all right. So I've got the basic mechanics of an app. If you can do this, and all I have to do is scale out mm-hmm. and fill in.
Mm-hmm. And so, prettify, obviously.
Oh, yeah. You got to do, but that's just like CSS land.
Yeah, that's right.
And all the stuff I can't do.
Yeah, stuff that I'm still trying to learn how to
do. Right, and what do we do with stuff we can't do? We diminish it.
That's right.
That's just that UX stuff.
It's just color.
Anybody can do that. It's color.
Right.
So what's behind that? Is this app, and I'm going to shrink this stuff down. This is the Angular Tour of Heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to describe a little structure here, and we'll do a little bit in it. And I'm actually even going to take that away so we have no distractions. So I have an app here, and it has an index.html. And if we remember the one we were looking at before, it looks very similar.
Mm-hmm.
There are some differences. Right, instead of going to the CDN to get these three libraries, I'm going to Node Modules. So now I'm getting into the world in which I'm no longer, because really, who can build an app where, like if I wanted to fix that app and I'm on the airplane, I'm dead.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right? So I want to be able to work, you know, here. And I want to manage the libraries as they go over time. So I've got a package, JSON, and anybody who's sort of getting into the whole NPM world is going to learn about this. And if you're doing MVC6, it's the same world. So I'm having it pull in my libraries here, and but otherwise the kind of basic structure is the same. Now there's something that's a little different. The thing that's a little different is that I am no longer transpiling in the browser. I am going to transpile in a build step.
Right.
As opposed to on the fly. If I'm going to do it in a build step, then I want System.js not to transpile for me and not to get that. I want it to get the JavaScript that was transpiled. So what I'm saying here is, hey, whenever I ask for foo, expect it to be foo.js. Whereas before it was like expect it to be .ts.
Yeah.
Okay. So I have to do that. And then I have one entry point. I just have to import whatever my startup is, and I call it Bootstrap, whatever mm-hmm. my startup thing is, and off we go. And here's my app again. Right.
My app.
All right. So that's a subtle difference there, but it's an important difference.
But easy to swallow, though. It makes sense.
I've gotten used to swallowing.
Nice.
All right. So what did that mean in terms of how I run this? Now, there is and should be all kinds of visual tooling to make this easier on people, but I'm going to get real with you. I'm going to go down into the command line.
Let's do it.
And fire this guy up. And I'm going to have to... I'm going to go here, and I'm actually already doing stuff, so I'm going to kill this one, and I've actually got two windows open, and I'm going to kill this, and I'm going to clear the decks, and we're going to take it from here. So I'm in the directory, right, and I want it to compile in the background. And I'm going to do that by taking npm run tsc. And that is going to fire up the TypeScript compiler. Okay. And then it's going to say, hey, you're going to be doing it in the source directory. And I want you to watch. I want you to watch for changes. And if there are any changes, I want you to completely recompile everything.
So anytime you make a change to the TS file, it'll just make the change.
It'll just change it on the fly
in
for
place.
Me. In place. All right. Okay. And that's goodness. Because we, now in Visual Studio, it does that for you automatically. But out here in this world, we have to goose it a little.
Sure.
All right. So I've got that rolling. And then over here, I want to serve it, all right? And I don't have Visual Studio and IIS going here, but I'm going to use a node server. And I've hooked that up to npm, and I just have to say start. And I'm going to tell you how I knew that that worked. Boom, and up it comes. And now when I make a change, like here I'm in Heroes, and if I go back into to Visual Studio Code. And oh, let's go find my heroes, which I think are here. And I say, Mr. Nice Nice. All right. And by the way, I've got this to automatically save, so it should have retranspiled. Mr. Nice Nice.
There you go.
All right.
That's right.
All right. So all I have to do is get it to auto refresh into the right place. Now, what I'm using here is ES6 kinds of paging without the hash marks in it. Mm-hmm. So that's how I sometimes get into trouble. But it really is all happening for me in this very fluid way.
Sure.
So we got Mr. Nice Nice. So npm doesn't have a start command and doesn't have a tsc command. Where the heck did that come from? If we go back and look at our package JSON again, you will see some things called scripts here. I get to put any scripts I want in here. These are my own labels to then go off and fire off and do things.
I just had talked to Elijah, who said he prefers this over gulp and grunt.
Mm. A lot of people, well, because they only have to feel like they have to use one tool. And you can go pretty far away this way. I still find I need gulp to do more advanced build kinds of things. But this is keeping me cooking for at this level of what I'm doing.
Sure, and John Papa showed us that he needed gulp because he had these little comments where he would inject all of this JavaScript. And then this other one where he would inject the sort of the one put together with a little extra thing to get a cache miss so that it would actually download.
Exactly. As soon as you start getting into those things that are more production oriented, and you want to start linting and you want optionally and you want to, you know, move this thing to over there and turn this one sideways and vary depending on the environment. Is it a production environment? As soon as you start getting into real programming of this stuff, then heck yeah, you're going to use gulp. And I could fire up by the way, I can wire it up to one of these, so this could be a gulp task.
Yeah.
All right, so I would still, as a person typing at the keyboard, I am still saying npm do this thing, but the thing might actually be a gulp task.
That's awesome.
So you have the best of both worlds.
That's awesome.
Right, but for the simple stuff, we do here.
And so it seems like pretty simple to get started. But then we need to start thinking about, okay, well, we just have a list of heroes and we have a master detail. What if we start to have more stuff?
Right. So this being a demo, we have a very flat structure, right? So the obvious next thing, if I want a new one, is I keep throwing it into this garbage pit.
Mm-hmm.
But look, it's a file structure, I can break these into subfolders that are actually focused on the feature set that I want to deliver. So properly, again, you don't want to scare people out of the gate when you're trying to teach them something, but properly, all the dashboard stuff, I would tend to organize it around our our, you know, I think of these as our feature sets, right? Mm-hmm. So I would have had different folders representing that, and when I brought in a new one, like the customer set, the order set, I would create a new folder, and I would have that sort of dedicated to my own stuff. Not only would I do that, all right, but you remember when we first started, we had that root component called mm-hmm. app component, where mm-hmm. and we just got it all configured. And the equivalent here, by the way, it happens to be called Bootstrap. This is not a visual component. It is a component, or actually, no, it isn't even that. It sets up something that is a visual component. But anyway, we have this sort of setup world where I'm deciding what services I want to inject, what parts I want, okay? Well, what I would do is Angular 2 is just a sort of this tree. I'm waving in the air, so I'm going to do it up here. It's a tree of components.
Uh-huh.
And each component, so you start with a root component that owns the whole application and has the base services that everybody's going to use. Mm-hmm. But now I want to go towards like customers component, that mm-hmm. feature set. I create a little component whose sole job is to organize the needs I have for that. Get the service, get the injector set up, get all of that, get all the pieces that I need that just for that subtree.
Sure.
And then I start branching out from that and having all my little visual components and so forth. But I try and keep that just as minimal as possible. And then I go over here to inventory management, and I have a little tiny component whose only purpose is to be the root of that feature set.
I see.
All right. And then from that, now I can branch out and go crazy, right? But I have a main root, and then I have these little feature roots, and then everything descends from there. And I would organize my folder structure here in exactly that way.
I see.
And I'd make it real easy to find out what's the root of the feature set in each domain.
As far as organization, it doesn't care where the folder
is. It doesn't care.
Yeah.
But we want to give good advice, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because what you see in many people starting out and many framers trying, they think they're making it easy for you by having you organize things by the type of thing they are. Like, let's put all templates here. Yeah. Let's put all our controllers here. Let's put all our view models here, right? And to some degree, that pedigree has fallen into ASP, right?
Yeah.
Because when people first showed you how to do an MVC app, right, they were trying to teach MVC concepts. So naturally, they organized the file structure MVC concepts. No way to run a real application.
Right.
Well, you're not really locked into that in MVC either.
No, you're not.
But people don't show you enough that you can organize that in feature sets.
Sure.
And so originally we did that. Oh my God, we better put our components together. We got to put our service. We used to organize it by type just so we could get our heads wrapped around the framework's mentality. Mm-hmm. But that's no way to write an application.
No.
Write it around your app.
That's awesome.
Right. So you absolutely reorganize it that way. And you just start thinking in terms of trees of components, like a DOM tree.
Mm-hmm.
App. Customer, within customer, all the little pieces that,
sure, sure.
that start folding in.
How granular should you get? I mean, should you like go down to like a single tag? Obviously, that feels like overkill. How deep down should you go when you're doing that kind of segregation?
All right, so that's a matter of judgment.
Sure.
My feeling is that I try and look at it lines of code is not a bad guess. Right.
Yeah.
When you start to have lots of lines of code,
you might as well
take a look at that and say, maybe that doesn't have to be one thing. Maybe that's going to be easier to manage if it's not. I mean, I've seen a code behind that had like 40,000 lines in it. It was beautifully organized with region tags. I should tell you.
Oh, of course. Right? Well, then it's okay.
So that makes it okay, right?
Sure.
And he says, I said, what are you doing? And he says, what's the problem? I know where everything is. It's in that file. You can't argue with that.
Yeah.
There's an unmistakable logic. It's in that file. Of course, everybody who needs to do anything is in that file next to me.
Yeah.
Ready to break anything. And hard to test as all gets out. So my rule of thumb is break things into workflows. Break things into the parts that make sense. When things start to get long, if your component, you start finding that you're injecting like 5, 10, 25 dependencies in there, there's an opportunity. You know, maybe the code's telling you something.
Break something up.
It's telling you something.
Yeah.
And you look at these things and man, none of this is below the fold. I click any one of these. All right, now admittedly, this is really incredibly lightweight
sure.
demo code, right? But in production, my equivalents, like with my Angular 1 stuff, if it's more than like 200 lines, I'm done.
It's something's not right.
And I feel the same way about HTML. Who likes to wade through 700 lines of HTML.
Nobody. I don't.
No. No. And that can be broken up. That can, particularly in a language like this, I can look at, there's clearly, if I squint at it, there are clearly regions of that HTML that are coherent on their own, that have meaning. Because you ask them, well, what is this stretch of HTML? And they say, oh, well, that's the login stuff. Oh, that's where I present the customer list. Oh, that's where I present the, and I say, really? You know the name of that region. Why don't you just make it its own thing?
Got it.
That's the insight.
Okay. That's awesome. So what more advice do you have for someone that's going to be jumping into Angular 2?
So Angular 2 isn't ready as we're recording.
Right.
It's still just barely into beta. So I think it's not wise to write production Angular 2 any more than it's wise to write production ASP.NET 5.
Amen.
But you know that's where you're going to end up. You know there's going to be value there. So what you start doing is you say, I'm going to stay the course. Angular 1 is working great for me. But I want to position myself so I can get to Angular 2 when the time comes.
Sure.
What can I do? And there are things you can do. You can start learning to write in TypeScript.
Yeah.
Right? Angular 1 is really great in TypeScript.
Okay.
And it just flows. I wouldn't write an Angular 1 app except in TypeScript.
Okay.
That's the first thing I would do. There are certain patterns I would adhere to, something known as controller as. Anybody who knows Angular knows that they should be doing that and leaving the dollar scope version out of it.
Controller as is?
Controller as is the pattern. And we who come from Silverlight recognize that as MVVM. As a view model, basically what you're saying is, with controller as, is that the controller will expose properties of data properties that I will bind to directly. You want that paradigm in your head. And so when you use the so-called controller as pattern, the controller is a constructor function or a class, all right? And the properties of that class, first name, last name, current hero, list of heroes, are on that. And so effectively, you are binding to those properties when you do the controller as pattern.
Got it.
Do it. Leave that dollar scope thing behind.
Yeah.
The next thing I would do is you have a lot of choices in Angular about how you construct your dependencies. And in Angular 2, I would try and say, you know what? I don't need all those varieties. It actually, if I just called it a service, wouldn't we all be happier?
Yeah.
Let's make it a service. Stop fooling around. So I would say, just take everything that's one of those other flavors of thing and make it a service.
Okay.
I would say, and then I have a series of other recommendations that I make for people. But basically, it's keep on keeping on, and know that when the time comes, you don't have to do a big bang transition. Yes, I can have an Angular with hundreds of screens. I'm going to be able to get to Angular 2, and I do not have to do it on. Wake up on Monday and have it done by Tuesday.
Yeah.
Right. You can bring it over a piece at a time, and one of the they're actually providing sauce for you to do that called NG upgrade and NG downgrade. But basically, what it allows you to do is cherry pick the parts of the application and gradually morph them. And now you've got Angular 2 inside of Angular 1 and Angular 1 inside of Angular 2, and then you just gradually weed it and tend the garden until the garden is an Angular 2 garden.
That's awesome.
By the way, I feel the same way about Spa and MVC. A lot of people have these big MVC applications. They say, I'd love to go to Spa, but I can't do it. And I say, why can't you do it? They say, well, I'd have to stop everything. I say, no, you don't. Look at your MVC application and look at that screen that you're doing there, the one that feels slow and clunky. Take that one out. Write that as a Spa. You weave it right into the MVC fabric. So you're moving, here I am, MVC page, whoop, down I'm into the Spa, yeah. I live in the Spa for a while, whoop, I'm back out. Nobody has to know. And then eventually, over time, if it's right, your MVC app gradually becomes a Spa.
That's an interesting approach, because I think as a developer, we sometimes feel like, oh, I got to rip this all out and start again.
No.
And it's cool to be able to say, this page is not feel good for our users, so let's just spot this page.
Let's just spot this page. Leave everything else where it is.
That's awesome.
All right, and let's make it work. And now let's really prove it. Let's learn that we're better than the original page. A/B test it. Mm-hmm. See which one the users like. Right. Did you do better? I bet you do.
Yeah.
I actually did that, by the way, with Rowan's Unicorn Store. Have you ever seen that?
No, I haven't.
Oh. Well, that's it. First of all, your viewers should know about Rome Miller. It's one of the best unicorn. The unicorn story is one of the best demonstrations of the full suite of ASP.NET 5.
Are you talking about Rowan Miller?
Rowan
Miller. Entity Framework 7?
Yes. Yeah.
He's a good guy.
He's a great guy. Yeah. Works really hard in his demos. And that thing is like the whole suite of ASP.NET 5 in a box. Uh-huh. It's a great tutorial. So he had one of those things, and I took the administration page, and I did a Breeze spa version of it, and they're plugged right into the menu, and you can see it the old way, and you can click it the new way, and you can decide for yourself. And it's right, just...
That's awesome.
Right in there.
Well, thanks so much for spending some time with us, bud.
Thank you. Thank you, Seth.
Where can people go to find out more about some of the stuff you talked about?
Well, a lot of the Angular 2 stuff, they're going to find that the documentation is starting to take off. It's starting to be refined. Mm-hmm. I have a little bit to do with that.
I know. I saw that, like, this stuff that you were showing us is in the actual Angular documentation.
That's right. That's right. So there are a number of people we all know and love who are contributing to making the Angular 2 docs come to life. And there are people that we don't know, not everybody knows and should know, mm-hmm. Who are doing that. But that is a great place to go to learn about Angular 2.
That's awesome.
And of course, when you are, like, you've hit the wall and you need some professional help, I may be able to help you.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for being here. How do you like Dev Intersection?
I love this conference. I love this conference because you're exposed to a lot of fresh ideas as they're hot off the press. Mm-hmm. And the people are excited. They're here to learn. They're here to share. The attendees are great, and I see all my friends here. You know, it's a must do thing for me.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for bringing spice into our Dev Intersection.
Ta-da!
Hey! Thanks for watching, you guys. Again, we're in Las Vegas for Dev Intersection. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time. Take care.